This is a No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat with guest James McMurtry. I'm your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond. For the best in Americana, alt country, indie rock, and more, point your browser to nosurfmusic.com. So this is another edition of No Surf Music's Burning River Fireside Chats, and joining us again today is a songwriting legend, Mr. James McMurtry. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm terrific. It's always good to talk to you, so I'm glad we get to see you again. And actually, the last time you were here at the Kent stage, we had the opportunity to sit down and chat, and you're here once again with the Bottle Rockets, so I guess the last time worked out pretty well, huh?
Yeah, it always works out well with those guys. It's a pretty good fit.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're a lot of fun, too. Yeah. They're great guys. So what do you think of this venue? Just because I guess you hadn't played before the last time. Is that correct? So
the first time. I remember it as being a pretty good place. And it sounds good. The crew's professional.
Yeah, there you go. And it's kind of nice. They got the sort of stadium-like seating because it used to be a theater and all that. So it's comfortable for the folks who are here, too.
Yeah.
But since we last saw you, rumor has it that you have been hard at work preparing for a new album, and you just signed to a new label. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, we got most of the record in the can. I got to go back to New Orleans at the end of June and do in about 5 days just messing around putting guitar parts on and stuff, maybe some harmony vocals. But other than that, it's pretty much done.
Okay. And it's been quite a while since your last studio album.
That was
6 years, maybe?
That was 2008.
Okay. So I always, ask folks when they've been sort of on hiatus that long as far as recording goes, why was the time right now to get back into the studio?
That's when I got the songs together.
Well, that makes sense.
And I ran out of gigs. I pushed it as far as I could on the road.
Okay.
Because for some reason, we managed to keep touring even without a record. And we did have that live record out in 2009 that helped, but it finally wound down to where it's getting harder to get people at the shows because there's nothing for anybody to write about or interview about. And I tell people we used to tour to try to promote record sales, and now it's the other way around. We make records to promote tour dates.
Mm.
Because if you got a new record, the press is going to notice you. They're going to tell people you're coming to town. So you can't go too long. I push it past the limit.
I got you. Yeah, it's funny. A lot of folks who I talk to who have been in the business a while have mentioned that it's kind of, changed in that way. It's reversed.
Yeah, well, there's no mailbox money. There's no artist royalties to speak of. Not much songwriter royalties because people just aren't buying as many records, and they're buying a lot of downloads, and the royalty rate is a lot lower on downloads than it was on hard products. I mean, we still sell a certain amount of CDs because our fans are old mostly. They're like us. They like to have something to look at. They like something to hold in their hand and put in a machine because that's how we were raised. But still, the downloads are taking over.
I got you. Well, I think the last time that we talked, I mentioned the fact that I personally believe that your work has just been getting better and better as the years go by.
I think so.
Well, I really do believe it. Childish Things and Just Us Kids, I feel, were the absolute top of the line for your work. So what can we expect from this new album?
Well, this one, a lot more relationship-oriented songs, not so much politics.
Okay.
Yeah, a little bit of politics filtered in here and there, but not really on a soapbox. And I mean, the way I prefer to do social commentary and politics is just to sort of touch on it in the song as if it's part of the world.
Mm.
So every now and then I'll have a character in a song that's a soldier or a guardsman or something like that, just to remind us that there's a war going on because the media is sure not telling us. I hear a lot of complaints about the liberal media, but we have not had a liberal media since Vietnam. The Vietnam War was on TV every night.
Mm.
6 o'clock news, there was going to be some war footage. Might not be combat footage, might just be a bunch of troops walking down the road, but you had you know, names of the dead listed, that kind of thing. The war was right in our face, and it was much different. You know, we didn't have 200 channels. We didn't have the internet. We had 4 channels basically.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember that we had much more of a political center in those days, because everybody listened to Walter Cronkite, right and left. We all listened to Uncle Walter, and that war didn't end because kids marched in the street.
Mm-hmm.
It ended because Cronkite and his generation and his bunch of newsmen got tired of it. They just decided it was pointless and told us.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you know, we're out of Vietnam. That's not going to happen now because, for one thing, the press has been totally buffaloed ever since Ronald Reagan. Reagan invaded Grenada after the truck bomb in Beirut to kill 360-some Marines.
Mm-hmm.
He needed some good news, and he was not going to tolerate any bad news, so he invaded this little island because they were building an airport with a 12,000-foot runway, and the hype was that that meant it was military. 12,000-foot runway is also necessary to land 747s, mm-hmm. so you can have a tourist trade.
Which, if you're a small Caribbean island, might be useful, right?
There was a great columnist out of Chicago in those days, Mike Royko, and Royko just called the British architectural firm that designed that airport and said, "Is this a military airport?" And they said, "No, sir, a military airport has to have multiple runways so you can scramble jets in all directions so that one artillery shell or well-placed missile can't take them all out while they're lined up on that one 12,000-foot runway." But anyway, that's just an aside. But what I was getting at was where the press really got buffaloed, because the only two reporters that made it onto the island of Grenada were arrested and detained on an aircraft carrier for the duration of the action.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, there wasn't a lot of war reporting on American interventions. You know, I don't remember much coming out of Panama when they went after Noriega. And then, the first Gulf War under the Elder Bush, no reporters got anywhere near the front. They got in the tent with Schwarzkopf, and he presented the war to them just as he wanted to present it. Schwarzkopf was a Democrat, interestingly enough. And then the next, the second round of Gulf War, they decided, well, this time we'll let them put on their soldier helmets.
Mm-hmm.
They got the reporters to embed and be part of the team, and so they did exactly what the military told them to do.
Well, that gives them a lot of control over it, because
what they get in return is it pumps their ratings up.
Right.
Because they got guys out there actually seeing stuff, but it was total control, and... We don't have a liberal press. I don't know that we even have a free press anymore. So that's why every now and then I'll put a soldier in a song.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
So
I've got one on this record that's actually sung from. It's not so much about the war as it's a guy coming home from Afghanistan, going back to South Dakota to his family ranch just in time for the blizzard of 2013 that wiped out half the ranchers in South Dakota.
Okay, okay.
And the premise being that, like, he gets home and his brother's saying, "Well, nice to have you home, but what are you going to do, even if this works out, there's not much to do around here." And then, the herd gets wiped out, and he's thinking, "Well, might as well re-up again. There's no jobs here." That's something I've noticed in recent times is, so many of those people over there having to fight are over there, they go in for economic reasons because there's just no jobs where they are.
Right.
And that's been happening for a while. A friend of mine was career military, and he went in the 80s for the same reason. He was
trying to
find work.
I think just speaking as somebody who's a little bit younger than you are, I graduated college in 2002, and so it was right in the middle of the whole war on terror thing. But if you were like me and you went to college, I mean, you weren't planning on serving. Nobody in my generation does. But if you can't get into college and you need a job, military, they'll pay you, like you say. Sure. So I think it even to some degree has polarized it more than back in the days of the draft in Vietnam and all that.
Well, my father was a teacher. He taught college-level creative writing during the Vietnam years, and that's what drove him out of teaching was, he was teaching these kids that didn't want to be taught. Mm-hmm. They were only in school to get a deferment. And he was kind of, he was against the war. He didn't really blame them for trying to get out of it, but he didn't want to try to teach them because they didn't want to be taught. It was just pointless. So he got out of academia at that point.
I gotcha. Well, he still had plenty of writing to do anyway, so.
Yeah, he did. Well, he also had a rare bookstore. That was his main gig.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. I didn't know that. So let me ask you, what was the name of the song you were just talking about the soldier?
It's called South Dakota.
South Dakota? Okay. Well, I find it interesting because in some ways it's very similar to many of your sort of more political songs in that, like you said, they kind of touch on it. But it's not really hit you over the head necessarily. It's more like folk music in that you're telling a story and...
Yeah, you got to be careful about getting on a soapbox. And I got lucky with We Can't Make It Here.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if you try to make a song, try to make a point with a song, it's hard because the song might not want to make that point for you. And if you're not trying to write politics, you can let the song have its head. You know, you can change the whole meaning of the song just for the sake of a better rhyme, better meter scheme.
Okay.
It's tricky business.
So, given what you were just saying about the media and the way it's changed over the years, and also how the music industry's changed since, you know, guys like Dylan or Phil Oakes were on the front line of the activist movement. How do you feel as an artist? It's sort of, I guess, what do you feel is your ability, and how do you feel that you want to interact with people on a political level then? What do you feel like you can change? Or
I don't know that I can change anything. I can highlight things.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe somebody else will want to change it. I don't know. That's, sometimes I get mad enough to do a blog or, you know, try to write a political song that really makes my point, but for the most part, you're not doing the cause any good unless it's a good song. So mm-hmm. you've got to be an artist first. And that's hard. Steve Earle has the best record of you know, highest percentage of good political songs than mm-hmm. anybody that I can think of. Somehow he manages to make his point and still write a good song.
Definitely, definitely.
Most of us, it'll drag us down. We'll turn into preachers and everybody will tune out.
Well, I certainly think you've done a good job over the years. I mean, like you said, Can't Make It Here is a terrific song. God Bless America is more nail on the head.
But that's so kind of oblique. Yeah, and then, you know, Cheney's Toy is a cool track,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of people misinterpreted that, and that's not really... See, what brings people into a song is hearing themselves in it. And Cheney's Toy is just obviously McMurtry going on a rant. And it's pretty cool as rants go, but that's what it is. It's not mm-hmm. going to be, never going to have the popularity that We Can't Make It Here had. And so it was kind of, I really should have fought him harder and not let him use that as a single. Because, you know, it's just, it wasn't going to happen.
Gotcha. I personally thought that was a great song myself. I mean, you did catch some flack for it.
Like, people thought that I was saying the soldiers were Cheney's Toys, which
right.
I was not at all. I was saying Bush was Cheney's Toys.
Exactly. Toy.
But I can see how you could miss that because, you know, not everybody reads the New York Times. And most of the references that point to Bush is what I got out of the Times. You know?
Right. Well, and it's a little bit like Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA, you know? I mean, you look at so many people, they think that's a big patriotic song, and no, it's about how you guys killed my brother and took my job away and ruined my life.
Yeah.
You know, they just hear the chorus. They don't really think about the deeper meaning. So I guess maybe things turned out similarly with Cheney's Toy, but if you really listen to it, it's a great song, in my opinion.
It's one of the better tracks I ever produced, but I don't, it's an okay song, but it's a really cool track. It's the only track I know that has electric slide dulcimer. That's a dulcimer.
Is that what that was?
Using a tuning fork as a slide because that's the only way I could make it intonate.
Interesting.
And once in a while I'd mash it against the fret and you get this weird wah-wah kind of effect on it. I don't know if it came out, but you couldn't control it at all. It was like, it was a cool sound.
Interesting. Well, I'll have to listen to that again and
pick up on that. I took one of those Dean Markley pickups and taped it under the bridge, under the strings there right by the bridge. And then use that tuning fork for a slide just to get that sort of, like, sword out of the scabbard kind of sound.
I gotcha. So I guess getting back to what you've been working on lately, I don't think you mentioned it. Does the new album have a title yet, or have you just...
No, I don't know the title until I sequence it.
Okay.
That's usually how it happens.
Gotcha, I gotcha.
I'm not producing this one. I got tired of producing myself. I'm starting to repeat myself, so I got C.C. Adcock to produce, and he works with an engineer by the name of Mike Napolitano, who's really almost a producer himself. Well, he is a producer, sort of a co-producer. And between the two of them, they're like a two-headed dragon. They get some pretty cool stuff done. Can be infuriating. Sometimes I got to leave the room and let them fight it out, but yeah, they make good records.
There you go. Well, it's good to have a good team behind you, I'm sure. Kind of invigorates things, too. But you said it's more personal songs this time, more relationships and all that. Can you preview some of those?
Well, CC came out and said, you know, James, everybody hates politics, everybody loves pussy. So guess what I want you to write?
I guess that works out. Mm-hmm. So can you maybe tell us a little bit about one or two of those songs and maybe give us a preview of what's coming up on that? Are there any that are your favorites? Or?
Well, there's one we're going to do tonight called Copper Canteen.
Okay.
It's about a marriage. And it'll first strike you real negatively, but then there's something endearing in it. But, it's actually set more in this country, more up north. I got the idea just driving around up here in the winter, seeing all the ice fishing going on. And, you get over by the lakes, you got drawbridges and stuff like that. So I use a lot of imagery from either Great Lakes or Northeast, New England coastal kind of thing. But it's basically, it's the guy just kind of ribbing his wife, kind of mean, but in the end of it, they're together. They've endured something. Yeah, it's a long-term relationship song. Not something I've really experienced. And I was married for 10 years, and then I've been with the same lady for 13.
That seems pretty long-term.
I can't imagine being with anybody, or having been with somebody for... Well, yeah, I can't imagine it, because that's how I wrote the song. But yeah, this couple's probably been together 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking at, they got a hardware store or something that they're going to have to close because the big boxes are running out of business. There's a lot of dire elements to the song, but in the end, there's a triumph within. Check it out.
Definitely look forward to that tonight.
Tim Holt plays accordion on this song.
Okay. Sounds like a little bit of We Can't Make It Here mixed with relationship song.
Not really.
The big box part, I was going to say.
It's just sort of woven in. That's just what happens.
Gotcha.
But actually, I got it. My dad had to... He opened a rare bookstore in D.C. in 1970. And he kept it open nearly 40 years, and he had other stores in other places. He still has a place in Archer City, Texas, which is his hometown. It's the only place he can afford the real estate to have that many volumes.
Gotcha.
Because it's just the rent got too high in major cities. But he and his partner at the time, a lady that he moved to Virginia thinking he was going to marry this lady. And this was in the late 60s, we moved up there. And she was married at the time and trying to get a divorce, and reasonably amicable divorce, as I recall. But the laws were so strange in those days. In the District of Columbia, you had to be physically separated for, I think, a year, maybe two, before you could even file.
Mm.
So by the time the divorce happened, my father and this lady had just fallen out of love. They were still friends, but like they weren't going to marry anymore. But for some reason, they decided to start a bookstore together.
Okay.
And they did, and they kept up for a long time. But the trade started to decline up there kind of after 9/11, when the foreign dealers and collectors quit flying over so much. And I guess the internet was just starting up and things were changing, and the DC store just started to fail. And while they kept it open a little while longer, so the pension would kick in. So that when they closed it, she could get her pension.
Gotcha.
Because they paid into the pension fund all those years. So I used that detail in this song. That's what little I knew about retail, anything. Independent shop ownership.
Gotcha, gotcha. Well, that's kind of a metaphor in some ways to me. The book industry, or the publishing industry, I guess, and the music industry are very similar, I think, in the ways that they've evolved. You know, everything has gone electronic. The bigger companies squashed all the smaller companies and all that. So let me just ask you, because you know, there's been a lot of debate about the role of labels in the new age, and you just signed with Complicated Games, is that correct?
Yeah, yes.
What do you feel like is the advantage to having a label today and having them to back you up?
You don't have to do the legwork. You'd still rather have a label.
Mm.
I don't want to be self-released. And also, the main thing for me at my age, I have to get it going in Europe. I've made little forays over there, but I really haven't figured it out. Well, Francois Marais, who started Complicated Game, used to be the head of the U.S. division of a label called PIAS, which is an acronym for Play It Again Sam Records. They were based out of Belgium.
Okay.
And they're the biggest independent in Europe, so they have, you know, they got branches in the U.K. and in every country in Western Europe. Which is a huge deal, because to work over there, you have to have a licensee in every country. And up until now, my only European licensee was German, which is a great label, Blue Rose, out of Germany, but you can't play in France on a German label because they still hate each other. The French will not pay attention to you if you go in there on Blue Rose. The English will barely pay attention to you. The only reason they paid attention to me going in there is because I brought Ian McLagan to play keyboards.
Okay.
The first time. But, so, I, you know, middle-aged Americans can still get big over there. And we're getting to the age where we've got to get big somewhere, because we cannot maintain at the level where we are now. You know, you get older, life gets more expensive. So we gotta find more. It's sort of like being a traveling salesman, you know, trying to open more territory.
Gotcha.
Well, you know, Francois tried to sign me to PIAS and they didn't want me. And he took it as a challenge, and he's thinking, well, I can market this guy. So he left and started his own thing, Complicated Game. They're still on pretty friendly terms with those guys, and a lot of his old PIAS buddies are, you know, they've listened to some of the roughs and think, oh yeah, we can take him here. He's got it pretty well worked out on the continent. We still haven't figured out the UK.
Gotcha.
They're tricky, but that's where we have to go. And he's, you know, I think he'll be pretty strong in the US too. And if he's not, we're pretty strong in the US. We can figure something out here.
Gotcha. And I mean, as you're demonstrating right now, big a wine fan as you are, I'm sure you'd like to play France and Italy and all that.
Well, the truck stop food is so much better over there. Truck stops in Germany give you real bratwurst.
I've never been to Germany, but just for that, I should try it.
Oh, no. That's the one cool thing about traveling over there. But otherwise, it's a lot of work. Because the thing about Europe is the load-ins seem to always be up a circular staircase. And most countries, most of the cities don't have cross-town freeways. A lot in Germany they do, generally, Germany and Holland, but in the UK, you have to figure an extra hour's travel time every day just getting from where you are out to the motorway.
Okay, right.
It doesn't come into town with exits, convenient exits right next to you. hotel or whatever, you got to take surface streets out to the edge of town and get on the freeway.
Gotcha.
You know, and that takes forever. And then you got another hour, you know, when you get to where you're going, you got to fight your way in through surface street traffic. So it is very different. The logistics are harder and the overhead's higher. You got to work every day. Like, the first run we did over there, I think we worked 23 days straight. You know, we never do that here. We work 6 days, 6 nights a week.
Gotcha. But, gotcha. It'd be nice to have a break in Europe, too, if you got one, right? I mean, if you're going to get one anywhere, have a day off somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know. We were always over there in the winter and fall. And you don't realize how much further north that place is. It's about the same temperature as, you know, the northeast U.S., but it's way further north. The only thing that keeps that thing warm is the Gulf Stream for now.
Yeah. Until Greenland melts, and then
Greenland melts and the Gulf Stream stops, they're gonna have an ice age in there.
Yeah, probably here too.
We'll get the floods.
Right. Well, right where we're sitting, there used to be a mile of ice over our heads, you know, and right. Just 10,000 years ago, it wasn't that long.
Yeah.
But
I came past a sign on the highway the other day. It said the Great Quake, 1811, 1812. That was the earthquake that made the Mississippi River run backwards for a long time.
In Missouri, wasn't it, center?
Where were we? I think we were in Missouri.
I don't remember the name of the town, but I do remember reading about that.
It was in Sykeston. Somewhere up in there.
Yeah, I think they felt that as far east as Washington, D.C. and all that, too. Yeah. That must have been a quake.
I think so.
Definitely. So let me just ask you one more question, because we were just talking about Europe, and you said you have some experience there, but you're hoping to build on it. Why do you feel like Americana music is so popular over there? Because I've noticed a lot of them really dig American sounds.
Well, we're exotic to them. They don't see us every day.
Okay.
You know, so America, there's another bunch of guys in a van. They see us every day.
I gotcha. So you think there's, I guess because there's debates between Billy Bragg and Pokey Lafarge. I don't know if you saw any of that. They got into each other about where Americana originated, because Billy Bragg, you know, socialist bomb thrower that he is, tried to argue that basically the modern Americana movement really started in England because of all the skiffle guys and all that. So I'm just interested, because you've played there before, you know, if you do find a lot of people who, I mean, like you said, are just interested because it is something different, or if you find people who are really into it and are just starving for that kind of authentic music, but they don't really have it in their country.
Oh, no, they have it, certainly. Mm. They might not recognize theirs the way they recognize ours, and it's the same on this side.
I got you. Okay. Well, I know you wanna run and eat, so yeah, I don't wanna. Absolutely, it's important stuff. But I want to thank you again for joining us. It was really terrific having you. It's always a pleasure talking to you, and it's gonna be a hell of a lot of fun tonight watching you back up there.
Yeah.
And then when do you expect the new album to come out? Later this year?
October 28th.
Okay. Well, we'll be looking forward to that for sure, and hopefully, like you said, you'll be touring a lot more after that. So we'll see you soon after. Terrific. Well, James McMurtry, again, it's always great to have you, because you are such a legendary songwriter and you're always interesting to talk to. And this has been another edition of No Surf Music's Burning River Fireside Chats. Thanks again for being here, and you're going to get some food and we're going to listen to some great music.
This has been a No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammett, signing off. Remember, No Surf Music is your source for the best in Americana, alt-country, indie rock, and more. For original reviews and interviews, visit nosurfmusic.com.